This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 235 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Flu Hell. I apologize in advance, folks, but I evidently caught the flu, and I have a feeling I caught it at the FAA convention. So I'm going to do the best I can to limp through the show because the show must go on, as they say in theater. So we got a lot of good stories this week, Max. Autonomous flying taxis in New Zealand. Ford conducting drone research. It's about time we got the car companies into it. Package delivery in the UK and the US. And UAS traffic management in Switzerland and in the US. So we got some good cross-the-board stories. So how about we get started before I lose my voice completely?
All right, David, let's get started.
Well, our first story comes from the New York Times. Larry Page's flying taxis are now exiting stealth mode. The Kitty Hawk Company, financed by Larry Page, Google's co-founder and CEO of Alphabet, has been testing an electric, self-piloting air taxi in New Zealand, a covert project under the company called Zephyr Airworks. Everybody in tech wants to build a flying taxi, it seems like, Max. Maybe we need to start a flying taxi podcast.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. There certainly is an awful lot of activity, like you say, in that space. Well, this is interesting in that what we have here is the testing going on outside the U.S. for reasons that I think probably we can all imagine. That being, it's somewhat easier to develop some of this technology and test it out outside of the regulatory framework or maybe lack thereof that we have in the United States. And so they've been testing this thing in New Zealand. They call it the CORA. And I'm not sure what CORA stands for. Any idea, David? What does CORA mean?
I don't know.
It's probably some kind of a bird or something or a fish or I don't know what.
Well, we also have a video to meet CORA, but this is probably the most conventional looking aircraft out of all of the air taxis. It looks sort of like an airplane, but it's got lots and lots of vertical lift rotors.
That's right. It's got wings, fixed wings. And then on each wing is mounted three, I don't know, what would you call these, David, pylons, let's say, extending ahead of and behind the wing. And there's a rotor on the front and the back. So what we have here is 12. Yeah, that's right, 12. I had to do the math.
Six on each wing, two wings, 12 rotors.
Yeah, I'm a little slow. You're the one that's supposed to be slow, David. I guess my math is a little bit lacking, but
yeah, you're the engineer. I went into history because I couldn't do math.
And of course, it has one pusher propeller in the tail at the aft side. A tricycle gear, fixed gear, three of them, and this is apparently making some progress there. The Kitty Hawk Company, as well as the Prime Minister of New Zealand, were to announce, and probably have as we record this, they were about to announce an agreement to test the autonomous planes as part of an official certification process. So it's more than just, you know, go out in the field in New Zealand and test these things. New Zealand has some pretty robust goals, some ambitious goals. They're trying to get to a state of being net carbon zero by the year 2050 in transportation by all electric autonomous aircraft such as this one are part of how they hope to make that goal.
Now, what does make this different, and I thought was interesting, was it's sort of designed for the environment it's working in. It's got a 36-foot wingspan. This is not something you're going to operate in a downtown urban environment. But if you need to go from the North Island to the South Island or something like that, it has a 62-mile range for two passengers. So you're talking about something that's supposed to push over distance, but it isn't. It definitely is not going to be set up to fly in an urban environment like a lot of the other air taxis we've seen that are just basically oversized quadcopters with a cab. So I guess the aircraft physical attributes are because it's going to be flying over bigger distances. And New Zealand is a aviation country. It's also a country where you could do this kind of airspace traffic because there isn't as much traffic as we would have in the United States.
Sure. And I also think that with a name like Larry Page associated with this project, it gives it some, maybe some extra credibility. I mean, we see the Elon Musk, Larry Page, all of these guys who've made their billions in the internet age are doing amazing things. And I think that by the involvement of Larry Page in this project, it just really kind of gives it a little bit more credibility, at least in the eyes of the public, I think, to accept this sort of thing. What do you think? Or do you think people view these guys as kind of crackpots with more money than brains?
Yes. They have the ability to get into doors, I would say.
Mm.
You know, they have the capital to be able to do these things. And they also, and like you said, the prestige comes with that. But more to the point, I think they can open the doors to push forward this stuff, and which gives them the ability to do it.
Yeah.
And they like thinking out of the box, you know, and this is very... was clandestine, but it's under the radar, and then that kind of capital can be funneled over and then pop up. It's kind of an interesting thing that you really can't do this off the shelf as a startup like you would in the 30s with airplane companies. You know, it's sort of, you got to have the venture capital, and that's what these guys love playing with is venture capital.
And we have a video, it's a promotional video, I guess, that is going to be available in the show notes. So just visit the uavdigest.com/235 and you'll be able to see what this Cora looks like.
All right. Well, Max, our next story, let's talk about old school companies getting involved with drones. Ford would be not something I would expect to show up in the drone industry. And this was from medium.com. Why is a car company looking to the skies? A glimpse into the Ford's drone research program. Now, in all fairness, Ford has been in airplane business a really long time. There was something called the Ford Flivver, which was going to be parked in every person's garage, the Model T airplane. And of course, there is the ubiquitous Ford Tri-Motor seen every year at Oshkosh. So Ford has been in the airplane business. So I don't know why it's a shock that they would be moving into the drone business.
There's an interesting quote in this article from Ford. They say, our customers are beginning to think about drones as tools to help get the jobs done. The same way they think about our vehicles. As researchers, we were intrigued by the relationship between our vehicles and drones and how we might serve our customers in the future. So we embarked on a mission to find out more. That's great. And we see that Ford was actually at that FAA UAS symposium that you attended, David. They say they're the only automaker on the FAA's Aviation Rulemaking Committee. So they're participating for sure. And in fact, they've been looking at ways to identify and track drones during flight. Remote ID that we've been talking about so much. Ford has an idea as to how that might be accomplished.
The idea is to use anti-collision lights that some drones have to broadcast the drone's 10-digit registration code. Use an ASCII-encoded binary signal as a standard baud rate. So basically, in simpler terms, sending Morse code by light.
Simple, it's clever, I think.
One blink, two blinks, on, off. That's not a bad way to do it. But the problem is somebody has to be able to know how to read it.
Right. And for that purpose, they've actually developed an app that they've tested with the camera that you can find on a phone. And using the app to detect the blinking lights and interpret them, they found that they could do that as long as the drone was within about 80 feet of the person using this camera. But what they say is, that's just a start. If you start to look at an optical zoom camera, something that you might find on a little more sophisticated consumer camera, that range, they say, could be extended by between 12 and 20 times. So if that's possible, then that would mean that you would be able to remotely identify a drone using this system. Of course, if you are, if you are intending to do something you shouldn't do, you could always disable the lights and the system. But nevertheless, a fascinating concept.
And they are going to be researching their use of drones for customers that intersect with Ford vehicles. So Ford's UAV Systems Group in Palo Alto created a customizable modular development program. Ford's got a big merchant product of delivery vans. So if drone delivery starts going into effect, Ford, wants to have the wheels on the ground for the rotors in the sky.
And of course, a company as large as Ford is going to have lots of different business units, different segments, different teams with different objectives. And I think it's pretty clever on the part of Ford to create this sort of this modular development platform so that if some department, some segment of the company starts to look at how drones might be used in conjunction with Ford vehicles or anything of that sort, that they have available to them this platform that they can test out ideas and things. So it sounds like Ford is really looking ahead, very forward thinking, I think.
Well, moving on, let's talk about the UK. And it might rid itself of beyond visual line of sight drone regulations. This is from thedrive.com. The National Air Traffic Control Service, NATS in the UK, intends to eliminate Beyond Visual Sight, or BVLOS, regulations. I guess that means, Max, that if we want to fly beyond visual line of sight, we need to go to the UK ASAP.
Yeah. Of course, not having beyond visual line of sight regulations is one of the big, not the only one, but one of the big holdups for package delivery by drone. And so it appears that maybe as early as next year in 2019, we might see those kinds of deliveries by drones in the UK. So one of the issues here, of course, is who leads the technology? Who is first to market? And the regulatory agencies in different countries have a really strong determining role in that. So, if you want to be competitive on a global basis, you need to be able to, to get on with these things as quickly as possible. Of course, you want to be able to do that safely and all, and that's where the regulatory agencies come in. So it's kind of a there's sort of a give and take. Do you want to be to market quickly competitively globally, or do you need to move more slowly and more safely? The right balance maybe is difficult to identify.
So let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum with good old US of A. This is also from thedrive.com. Drone deliveries really coming soon, officials say. 149 companies have filed applications with the FAA to provide package delivery by drone. And 10 of them should get approval by May. This was one of those underlying themes last week at the symposium. And this is all under the IPP, or the Integration Pilot Program, which was another big term thrown around there, which is our president's initiative to get drones and drone commerce up and running. The FAA has been charged with speeding up their processes.
And when we say speeding up, boy, we really might mean that quite literally. This article mentions that according to the Wall Street Journal, Jay Merkel, who is a senior FAA air traffic control official, and he was at the symposium, and he stated that companies like Amazon, quote, think they might be ready to operate this summer.
I heard that quote. I'm still not convinced.
Skeptical, but, huh?
Well, it's coming. I don't, it's just, everybody says it's coming so soon, and I still think there's a lot of hurdles to overcome.
Yeah, I agree. Technical, social, even privacy issues, noise issues. There are a lot of things to consider. But again, if you take the time to carefully analyze and consider all of them, you end up waiting for years. So back to that balance, speed versus safety.
And to stay on that kind of theme, we've got a press release from SkyGuide. SkyGuide and AirMap joined forces to develop Europe's first national drone traffic management system. And we'll have the press release in our show notes. SkyGuide and AirMap have partnered to develop the first national drone management system in Europe, and it's for Switzerland.
That's right. And this is something called U-Space, the UTM system that SkyGuide trialed last year in 2017, along with AirMap. So SkyGuide, of course, is a Swiss air navigation service provider, and AirMap provides an airspace management platform for drones. So together with SenseFly, who is the manufacturing partner under this program, they're looking to deploy this U-Space UTM system.
What's interesting about this is it has dynamic geofencing, and it's got real-time situational awareness and real-time, basically, geofencing. So if something happens, they can put up the geofence to prevent the drones from flying into that airspace. So it's interesting. I'm wondering how dense the airspace is in Switzerland, and I wonder how well it works with all of this going through mountains. You know, Switzerland's kind of a unique environment to be doing this operation. I mean, how do you get those radar signals and those signals to bounce around those mountains as you're flying your drones through them?
Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a unique operating environment, it would seem. But we're also taking some actions back here in the United States.
Unmanned traffic management system, UTM, big deal. And this is where we talked about last week with the FAA from the symposium, that the FAA is co-working with their people on the civilian side. And in this case, it's Amazon, Boeing, General Electric, and Google, all working together with NASA to start developing an unmanned traffic management system, or the UTM, for the NAS. So many letters, so little time.
And this is a private UTM system for drones. So I'm not exactly sure what the implications of that are. I mean, are we going to see a situation where there are multiple unmanned traffic management systems operating? That seems problematic. Or are we going to have a proprietary system or systems?
I think when they said private, they meant that it wasn't going to be funded by the federal government. The FAA is working as the nexus for all of these companies to come up with their proposals for standardization. The drone UTM is distinct from ground-based radars and human air traffic controllers. Like I mentioned last week, the big deal was 0 to 400. Most radars do not go below, do not survey the sky at 400 feet or lower, where all of these drones are going to be operating, except at airports on final approach. They want a traffic management system that will operate for the 0 to 400 airspace, but doesn't necessarily need to have to interact with ATC unless it goes above 400 feet. If you're doing a survey of like towers and you're going above 400 feet, yes, that unmanned traffic system would interact with air traffic control. Likewise, if you're flying in an airspace near an airport. So it's supposed to be eventually autonomous. I don't know how autonomous it's going to be for a while, but it's an interesting program. It's also the reason why we have ID. That way, if something's flying in that airspace and it gets picked up, it can be identified and law enforcement can provide an answer. And it's funding not from our pocketbooks here in the United States, but from the component companies, Amazon, Boeing, GE, Google. They all want a stake in this, so they're putting up their own cash to work together to come up with this system.
And they note that the technology is, well, similar to what you find in self-driving cars, which I don't think is particularly surprising. Also, the system will use cellular and web applications to manage UAS traffic, that it will provide local air traffic information. So it's not a system where you could go in and look at the air traffic situation, the UAS traffic situation across the entire United States, that the data that you would access and utilize would be fairly local, which I think makes sense. They also anticipate that it would take 2 years to develop this. I guess that's a reasonable time frame. I don't know. What do you think, David? Do you think 2 years is enough time to develop a comprehensive system like this?
You had me up until you said comprehensive.
Okay.
Yes, I think the optimism and the initiatives that these companies were presenting in Baltimore, I think a UTM system is viable in 2 years. Now, when you throw in the word comprehensive, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be, you're going to be 5 to 10 years for that. And it's going to change over time.
All right. Well, it's certainly exciting times, David, when it comes to unmanned aircraft. But, you know, I think we should wrap this one up, let you get back to bed where you belong, I think. Maybe with some chicken soup or something, hopefully.
No more chicken soup or Gatorade. I'm tired of chicken soup and Gatorade.
All right. Well, we want to thank all of you for listening to episode 235 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes, you can find them at theuavdigest.com/235.
And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook, facebook.com/theuavdigest. We want you to become part of the conversation and become part of our Slack listener team. You can do that by sending us a request at feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And of course, we'd love for you to leave some feedback on the various podcast networks like Google Play, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher.com. And of course, what did I miss? Did I miss anything? See, this is what happens, folks, when you do things out of order.
I think you got the key ones there, David.
So with that, I'm going to say, David, who's going back to bed.
In Max, in Hartford.
Thanks for listening and see you next week.